Carla, start by telling me, where do you live now and what do you do?
Well, here's the thing. You want the long answer or do you want the short answer? I have two homes. The homestead, which is on Madeira Drive in Standish Acres, and also I'm here in Sacramento, California, so I'm bi-coastal.
Okay, and where are you talking to me from now?
I'm talking to you from Sacramento, California.
Okay, all right. Now, how did you come to be bi-coastal?
Well, here's the thing. I'm born and raised in Columbia, South Carolina, went to all the public schools, was educated at Hampton Institute at the time, now Hampton University, graduated from Hampton with a degree in mass media arts, moved to Washington, D.C., lived in Washington, D.C. for 20 years. There I met my husband, did a lot of work in the arts, in journalism, in business, and met a gentleman from Detroit who was in charge of some major something with General Motors. Mm-hmm. And so he made me an offer that I couldn't refuse. So from Washington, D.C., we moved to West Bloomfield, Michigan, worked there for about 3 years. From there, we moved to Los Angeles, California, because my husband was offered a position with his aunt, who owned a number of group homes and foster care agencies, lived there for 3 years, left there and moved to Dixon, California, because my husband was offered a position with his brother, who was in real estate.
Oh, my.
Lived there for 7 years, moved back to the East Coast, to Upper Marlboro, Maryland, for 2 years, and then moved back to Columbia, South Carolina in 2013 because my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer and wanted to make sure that that we had the best ride and the best time. So moved there in 2013.
Okay.
Until 2017, and my husband was offered his position again at Vacaville Christian, where we moved back to California. So that's the long answer.
Okay. Now, tell me about Allen Benedict Court. When were you there? What were the years that you were there?
1957 to 1961.
Okay. What was it like?
Oh, I tell you. Your foundational years. I was born and raised, started my early years at Allen Benedict Court. And what I remember, Ms. Hardy, it was a wonderful community of people who cared and shared. You know, people, if you have sugar, I have sugar. If you have flour, I have flour. I remembered going to the ABC school and Miss Red, who was my first teacher, and it was just a vibrant community. I mean, parents supported everything we did. We had fashion shows and we had candy sales. No matter what we were doing, the place was always packed. I remembered my mother's friends, Miss Gallman, who also babysat and took care of us. You walk in her house and it smells like peppermint, and, you know, she would make those yellow grits, and she babysat my sister Kathy as well. I remembered Miss Peach and Mr. Woodard. In fact, they were our neighbors in Standish Acres, and many of the people who lived in Allen Benedict Court moved to Standish Acres. Miss Woodard moved. Mr. Mack and Miss Mary, they moved. I mean, so many people, you know, I guess they got the word that there was a new development, and many of them had worked hard and became homeowners. But what really stuck with me more than anything else is that it was a really wonderful community where people cared and shared and looked after children. You know, we were valued and protected us, and where the aunts who weren't your aunts were your aunts, and the uncles who weren't your uncles, your uncle, you know, were your uncles. So it was just a loving community where people worked hard and where people had pride in what they had.
you know, the stories that people are telling me are just heartwarming, just like yours. You know, I can just visualize it. I can just, you know, just see all of the togetherness and all of the love and the nurturing and support. So did you go to Carver Lyon?
No, I didn't. I didn't go to Carver Lyon. I went to Burton Elementary School. After I left Allen Benedict Court, we moved to Standish Acres. So Burton was my first elementary school. But I will say this too, and I have to say this because living across the street from a college, Benedict College, and of course Allen being next to Benedict,
yeah.
And then with one of the things that you don't know is that I'm a professional drummer. And I remember the Daddy Grace parades that used to come right in front of our apartment.
Yeah.
And I was standing there next to my mom and my grandmother and hearing the drums. And I would say, one day I'm going to play those. I'm going to play drums like that. And I, again, I was born in 1957, so I'm a little girl. But I knew there was something about the drums, and it was something about, you know, just the excitement and the energy. And I did just that. At 12 years old, my dad went down to the pawn shop. He got me a set of drums. I was asked to play for Big Betty and the Spiritual Lights, which was a quartet group. We traveled all across the coast of South Carolina and North Carolina and Georgia. And, I mean, it was just glorious. And even so, we were tapped to do a movie called Maybe Next Week Sometime, where it chronicled, you know, some of the folklore of the South, and we were tapped to be a part of that. And so, you know, even at that age, that imprint that was left on my life, because, again, you know, living in Allen Benedict Court, it was one of the best places, if not the best place, I'm told, to live. That even more so than Saxon Home. You know, people took pride in knowing that, you know, we lived in Allen Benedict Court. And even as my mother taught, Dorothy Davenport, and my dad, William Earl Davenport, they, you just couldn't tell them, you know, in terms of having their own place, that they have, you know, that they didn't have something that was of value.
Mm-hmm.
Because they did, and they talked about it. And A3, a lot of things happened in A3, apartment A3. And my mom used to tell the story of me going upstairs and locking the door. And she went down to Miss Gallman and said, "My baby's up there. I wanted to burn up the house." And Miss Gallman would tell her, calm down. She's okay. And so she talked me down so that I could, you know, open up the door. But I'm up there looking at them, and I'm laughing, and my mother's panicking, you know. But she knew that Ms. Gallman would, you know, help her to be able to get me down from wherever I was. And the two levels, you know, with the kitchen and the living room downstairs and the two bedrooms upstairs. I tell you, it's like we had moved to Beverly Hills.
You know, that's something, because all of the old articles talk about when Allen Benedict Court was built in 1940, HUD, it was one of the flagship public housing communities that was being built at the time. It was one of the earliest ones that was built, and it had all the modern amenities. And
yes.
So living at Allen Benedict Court was very different than other living in town,
yes,
particularly for African-American people, because a lot of them lived in shanty houses, and a lot of them didn't have, you know, running water on the inside or any of the other amenities, you know, the stove and the, you know, and all of the things that you had in there that, you know, people may not have been able to afford in other places. And so it was more than affordable living. It really was like a step above from everything that's been described to me. You know, it's really like a step above. And as we prepare for the demolition of it, it's 80 years old this year, the complex is. And so as we prepare for the demolition of it and the redevelopment of the site, we just knew there were just way too many memories to let them get buried, you know, with everything else. And so that's why we're doing the project, Allen Benedict Court, Forever in My Heart. And it sounds like, I just read what you said about, you know, remembering Mrs. Red and Mrs. Gallman, your neighbor, and then playing with Bobby Kraft. And it's funny that you would know by saying that name that I might know it. I'm a transplant, but I've been here a long time. Bobby Kraft is one of those people that you meet, and you don't forget that you met Bobby Kraft when you meet Bobby Kraft.
And he's the same Bobby Kraft. He's the same Bobby Kraft, effervescent, full of life, creative, imaginative. Now, I'm an artist. He's an artist. You know, I'm an actress. He's an actor. I'm an educator. He's an educator.
That's right.
You know, he's an educator at my alma mater, Columbia High School.
Oh, wow.
I was the first African-American president, and of course female, but African-American president of Columbia High School. We integrated Columbia High School.
Oh,
so when you call the roll of the people who have come through Allen Benedy Court, Little Lou Summers, you know, who was a DJ on the radio, you know, his wife, Miss Nellie Summers, and there was Jan, and there's Miss Burt, and there was Miss Cat, you know, and there's Mr. Matt. When you call the roll of the people who have come through and who were, in essence, given our foundational skills, you know, at Allen Benedy Court, because we were all, as you said, more than anything else, it was an opportunity for the whole community to wrap their arms around each other, you know, and to be able to encourage each other to be the best that we could be. And we had parents who, number one, knew who they were and who knew who God, of course, you know, is.
Sure.
And they taught us and they handed that down to us. So it was nothing that we couldn't attain. Even at that age, we knew that we were loved. We knew that we were prayed for. We knew that we were paid for in terms of our ancestors,
mm-hmm.
because older people would tell the stories, you know, and we would listen to the stories. We didn't have to go through a lot because we trusted what they said, because when they talked, we listened. And because they deposited so much in us, when you call the roll of the people who came through and were the beneficiaries of Allen Benedy Court, we are change agents. We are movers and shakers. You know, we are leaders in industries. I had the great fortune of being a journalist for a long time, working the White House, the Supreme Court, the Congress, you know, being an anchor, being a writer at newspapers and a contributing editor of magazines, owning at least 5 companies, you know, a publishing company, a toy company, you know, marketing firm, PR firm. All of that because people told us, you're going to be somebody. And not only did they tell us that, but they would press $5 in our hands, or they would, you know, they would send us money in the mail when we were in school. That's what Allen Benedy Court represents. It represents a proud people who took pride in working hard for what they had, who believed in God and family, and who supported and cared for each other. That's Allen Benedy Court.
Woo. You got me feeling some kind of way listening to that. It just feels so, oh, so full of pride and so full of, oh, promise. And it just really does. Tell me about your days working on Capitol Hill, working in the Supreme Court, anchoring all of those things. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, as a proud alum of Hampton University and American University, where I got my master's in journalism and public affairs, and Drexel University, where I got another master's in higher education, I have been afforded opportunities that, I guess, for 45 lifetimes in terms of working Capitol Hill and the White House and working the Supreme Court. That was my beat. Those were my beats. So I would do that and come back and do my report for the radio station and the television station on the campus of American University. I also had the wonderful opportunity of working for WUSA Channel 9 in Washington, D.C., as one of the field producers, just a marvelous opportunity. I also had the good pleasure of working on a show called Broadcast House Live, which was a daily magazine show. At WUSA, had the good opportunity of being one of the writers for the Afro-American newspaper in Washington, D.C. as well. Worked at KYS, WKYS, KISS, FM, you know, radio station, while I in Washington, D.C., owned my own public relations firm where I worked with Marion Barry and Union Temple and worked with artists and worked with politicians in Washington, D.C., worked at the D.C. Commission on the Arts and Humanities in Literature and Media, where we awarded grants to individuals and arts organizations in Washington, D.C. I can go on and on and on, and that's just Washington, D.C. Moving from Washington, D.C. and working in Detroit, Michigan, had the wonderful opportunity of working with Reverend Wendell Anthony, NAACP, and we did some marvelous work there as well. Moved from there, Los Angeles, was on a show called the American Inventors Show in 2006, where I created the first African-American doll that speaks Spanish, Swahili, and English, the Naya doll. And so we were able to get on that show, win $50,000 to advance our product from one doll to six dolls, six multicultural dolls that would, in essence, show children, teach children, and I'm sure adults can understand it as well, that it's not enough to have friends that look like you. In fact, Naya's friends, they don't look alike, they don't act alike, they don't learn alike, they don't think alike, but they play together. They build together. They grow together, you know, and so it shows the message is to appreciate and celebrate differences, not to think that difference is threatening, but to be able to embrace and see that difference is cool and special. So from one doll, now we have about 15 dolls working on an animated television show. We have children's books. I mean, it goes on and on. It goes on.
Well, I'm on your website now, and I'm looking at Naya's kids. Mm-hmm. And it's just wonderful, you know, that whole concept of teaching kids that it's okay to be different,
yes,
and it's also okay to be inclusive.
Yes.
It seems yes. like that's where we're trying to get to now with all of the protests and all of the reawakening that seems to be happening around the country with people who are not African American. I mean, it just seems so very, very timely, and it seems like you had the vision long ago.
In 1983, Naya, my daughter Naya, was born. Today is her birthday. She's
oh, wow.
37 years old today. And what we did, and you know how hard it was back then trying to find a doll that looked like our children, that looked like, you know, us. And so it was like finding a needle in a haystack. So we went looking for dolls and books and materials that reflected our culture, that reinforced our values. And I tell you, back then, there weren't many. And mm-hmm. so that was a long process. And I said, okay, here's the story of my mom who worked at Horseman Dolls Factory, ironic, but not really ironic, and exposed us to the color dolls, you know, that's the white dolls dipped in chocolate. Because, again, you know, having dolls and having toys that you can identify with, that reinforces who we are. And my motto is that all children deserve to see themselves reflected positively in the books they read, in the mm-hmm. toys they play with, and the television shows they watch. So fast forward, we created Here Comes Naya book, The Day in the Life of a Toddler, learning, living, seeing what her parents does, and she's what she's trying to model what they do. And so that was our first book, Here Comes Naya, What Will She Do? And we were invited into schools to be able to share with children the joys of writing and reading and telling their own stories and ultimately publishing their own stories. So we demystified that whole publishing process by using mm-hmm. Here Comes Naya. So instead of Here Comes Naya, What Will She Do? And we were personalized. Here Comes Jessica, What Will She Do? Lots of great things to inspire and mm-hmm. to encourage and to get children excited about the possibilities of who they could become,
mm-hmm.
and who they would become. So I'm telling you, I mean, and that journey by itself, Ms. Hardy, we have stories to tell because, again, we knew we had a product, you know, whose time was, we thought was now. Because, again, we live in a world where people don't affirm the humanity of people who are different. We're seeing that right now. Mm-hmm. To affirm the humanity and dignity of all people. And so it's like, okay, one doll, although we created that doll for our daughter, it became a doll for the daughters and sons of the entire world. And I'm going to say this, too, to you, because little did we know that we were going to be invited by former President Clinton, my family, to the White House to meet former President Nelson Mandela. And how did that story happen? Naya was 11 years old. We were living in Fort Washington, Maryland. He was doing a report on Africa. Me being a journalist, I know who's coming and going. So I said, well, why don't you write a letter to President Clinton saying that you would love to meet President Nelson Mandela when he comes to the White House? Because he came right after, you know, he was inaugurated as president of South Africa. Well, we did. We penned the letter. I never forget this. We were riding home, came home, checked out our answering machine. Hi, Darla. This is Ann from the White House calling to let you know that President Clinton and his wife, Hillary, would love for you to be a part of our inaugural celebration for President Nelson Mandela.
Wow.
What was it like when you got that letter?
I'm like, Lord God, look at you. Look at you. So that week, Naya and my husband, they were on all the media and all of that, talking about the buildup of her meeting President Nelson Mandela. I mean, it was just wonderful. We're there standing with Ron Brown, and I mean, just it was great. He's coming out, and we're right there with Maxine Waters. I mean, it was just amazing. Just to be in the number, like my mama said, just to be in the number. And so as we were walking away from the White House, Alfrey Wilder and a bunch of other people were there. We were walking away from the White House, and somebody from the media says, well, Naya, did you get a chance to meet President Nelson Mandela? She says, no, but I was really close. No sooner than we had gotten home, we had gotten a call from the president of the National Press Club saying that we understand that Naya didn't get a chance to meet President Nelson Mandela at the White House. Well, we're hosting a private luncheon for President Mandela and his daughter. We'd love for you to be our guest.
Wow.
So that's where we're having lunch with President Nelson Mandela and his daughter. And before we even entered in, and we have a picture of that with Naya, myself, and President Nelson Mandela, she presented the Naya doll to him with a note to the children of South Africa: keep on believing. And I made a promise to him. I said, I'm going to do all that I can for any child in South Africa who wants a Naya doll. They will be able to get a Naya doll. That was my promise to him. And I'm still working on that promise.
That's just wonderful.
There's so many stories.
Tell me about your daughter now.
Oh, you have to go on her website. It's too long to even. Naya, one of the most humble, brilliant, creative, God-fearing, loving, kind. Name an adjective that's positive, and that's Naya. Anybody who meets Naya, you will never forget her. Because one of the things, more than anything else, she's been afforded opportunities that people would sit and just be in awe.
Mm-hmm.
But her main thing is that God gives me this platform so that I can love his people. And that's who she is. She's a singer. She's a teacher. She's a wonderful mother to three wonderful, beautiful children, my grandchildren, a loving wife. She's had the opportunities of being in major productions, singing with Kirk Franklin, having her own music with Yolanda Adams, working with, name somebody, and she's worked in the industry in terms of working with Debbie Allen, working, you know, in television, in music at Warner Brothers. Now she's the worship leader for Trinity and creative arts director, where she produces video and produces content and sings, and she's just wonderful.
She's just absolutely wonderful. Does she live in South Carolina?
She lives in Dallas, Texas.
I see.
Dallas,
so you
Texas.
Get to get back here very much. Well, you have a residence here. Do you get a chance to get back very much?
at least 3 times a year. Last year, I was afforded the opportunity to not only get back, but to be able to hire wonderful actors. My company, Greater Works LLC, was asked to do casting for The Comet, and we were able to put people to work. We were able to tap wonderful talent because mm-hmm. Columbia is a gold mine, and I always wanted to come back and build a cultural arts center or a production company or something to be able to harness all of that wonderful, beautiful talent and energy and creativity and ingenuity. And I got a taste of it last year where we able to get Alex English on board to be the voice of a comet, able to, you know, tap a number of people, actors and extras. And it was just glorious. So the answer is yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So I hear about all of the wonderful experiences of your life so far and all of the experiences that you have afforded other people. And it's humbling, really, to think about the fact that all of that began at Alan Benedict Court and that
yes.
and that you see that and that you
yes.
feel and that you know that it launched you. I mean, it gives me goosebumps, really.
And we have to pay it forward. Somebody said, what, service is the rent that we pay for our stay here? We must pay it forward because we've been the deposits that the people who have deposited into me, we had wonderful teachers. First of all, with my parents and grandparents and my wonderful teachers,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so it's like I want to be that for someone else, you know? And my children, Nye's not the only child. I have 2 sons. Naeem and Nigel, they're in Portland. Naeem works for the Jordan brand at Nike. Nigel followed in my footsteps as a journalist. He's a video journalist, so he does film and all of that. And, you know, but that's what we do. And then my grandchildren, who are some of the most creative people in the world, you know, do the art that Rocco does. And, you know, I mean, it's just incredible. And he's only 8 years old. And, you know, so this is what our parents did and our grandparents and the people at Zion Baptist Church where I grew up.
Yeah.
You know, standing up there doing Easter speeches. Well, little did I know, that was preparing me for public speaking. Little did I know in terms of confidence building and singing and being able to play my drums with Brian Dreher, you know, at the Christmas cantata as a girl, you know, standing. I mean, come on. That's the least that I could do.
You know, have you had the opportunity in the past to have been invited back by Columbia Housing for anything?
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
Well, you know, this is really great because our executive director, Ivory Matthews, is really big on making sure the community understands that people who have come through the ranks of Columbia Housing in one way or the other are wonderful contributors to society, wonderful citizens, and people that took the pride that was instilled in them there and went on to share that pride with the world. And so you're just a living, breathing example of that. And I really hope to have the opportunity to be able to invite you to something here so that we can meet you. You're just an extraordinary human being. You know, you just, your energy just leaps through the phone. I mean, it's just so wonderful. If there are things that you could say to sum up all of the experiences that you've had in life that you say the foundation came from Alan Benedict Court in a way of gratitude, what would you say?
That the impossible is possible. That the impossible is possible. I remember the story that Dr. Maya Angelou, who I had the awesome response, well, I was going to say the awesome opportunity not only to meet
mm-hmm.
on 3 occasions, but I was invited to her home. I was working at BET as a producer, senior writer, and editor of Story Porch. And we were doing home videos. And I remember sitting around the table brainstorming as to who would do the narration for the home video. And I said,
That's a no-brainer. Dr. Maya Angelou. And they said, wait a minute. First of all, she just did the poem for President Clinton. What makes you think that right now we could be able to tap Dr. Maya Angelou?
And then she was the poet laureate for the country.
Absolutely. Faster because we can. Again, remember, the impossible is possible, right?
Great.
So they said, okay, darling, you got it. That's your assignment. You call her up and you ask her if she would do the narration for our Story Porch home video. I said, okay. So I got on the phone. I called my friend, Cora Masters Barry, the late Marion Barry, Barry's wife, who's in Washington, D.C., and who does wonderful work with the tennis court and the Venus and Serena. And I said, Cora, I said, I need to get Dr. Maya Angelou's number. See, what they didn't know is that Maya Angelou had just left my church, Union Temple, you know, maybe about a month ago, and that Ms. Cora Masters Barry brought her there. They didn't know that. So she says, okay, well, I'm going to give you the number to the school, and you can reach out to her there. Fine. So I called Winston-Salem. I said, I introduced myself, and I told them what I wanted. He says, well, we'll make sure that Dr. Angelou gets the message. Let's just say fast forward. Cindy Mahmood, who was vice president of syndication, she and I drove to Dulles. Got on this little prop plane, which I was very reticent. It's like, I'm not getting on there. She said, darling, that's the only way we can get there. I said, I'm not getting on there. She said, okay, I'll tell you what. You get on the plane, I'll rent a convertible, red convertible, and we'll just, I said, okay, fine. Get on this plane. We go to Dr. Maya Angelou's first home. She opens the door. She welcomes us, and she gives us a big hug. We set up. We sit in the kitchen and talking about, you know, just different things. And I take her over, you know, the idea of the show. And here it is. She's reading my words. She's reading my words. I love, first of all, I love Dr. Angelou. She was my virtual mentor.
Yeah.
She's reading my words to our show. And she finishes. She nails it. Then she begins to just pour into us and pour out. Who comes down the stairs but Ruby Dee? She was her house guest. So I had already met her because we had her on the show as well. So we do the exchange. And so Dr. Angelou says, okay, well, when your crew finishes, I'm going to take you to my new home that Oprah gifted me with. So we get in the car and we go to the new home. And who's at the new home? But what's the name? Touched by an Angel. Della Reese and her husband. So she comes downstairs and while she's downstairs we're talking and Dr. Angelou takes us out at the gazebo, serves us lemonade and brings out her poetry and reads to us. Okay. The impossible is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I said that even in terms of President Nelson Mandela. The mm-hmm. impossible is possible. And there are stories where Bill Cosby's mother-in-law drove to my home to get one of the Naya dolls because we were selling the Naya dolls in my basement, which was a doll factory at the time. And so she would drive and she would get some dolls for her grandchildren. The impossible is possible. I mean, it goes on and on and on, okay? Stories for days. So where did I get that from? Where did I get that from? My parents graduated from Booker T. Washington. The pride that they talked about in terms of what they were surrounded with and who deposited in those nuggets and lessons and wisdom into them. And then Zion Baptist. So all around church, community, home, school. The impossible is possible. And what's the other part? If you only believe. All things are possible if you only believe. That's it.
Wow.
You know, for the last question, I do want to ask you for any inspiration, you know, that you might want to leave on this interview for, you know, people, young people who are trying to figure it out, you know, trying to figure out how am I going to do these things. I don't see the past. I don't know how to get there from here. You know, listening to all of your experiences, all of your wonderful experiences, it just seems so clear that for kids that are, hesitant, you know, to step out there, someone like you could just be so tremendously inspirational to them. And so so I'm wondering what you'd say to them.
I created a shirt. I think it was maybe about 6 years ago, that says, I am enough, E-N-U-F, period. We didn't spell it the conventional way. I am enough. And so what I would tell any child is that you were born with value. You were born with worth. You were born with genius. God placed in you everything that you would need to be able to walk out your assignment, that you are enough. You don't have to work for love, work from love. You don't have to work for worth, work from worth. That whatever it is that you aspire to do, that get still and get quiet and talk to God about it. Because he's the only one that knows what your purpose is. And began to, more than anything else, move in the direction of whatever that thing is. Find that person who's doing what you aspire to do. Call them, email them, text them, talk to your parent about them, talk to someone, because the bottom line to it is that degrees of separation?
Yeah.
Somebody knows somebody. Somebody knows somebody. And when you go to school, take full advantage of your opportunities, because we didn't have those opportunities. Our parents didn't have those opportunities. You, as Maya Angelou would say, you've been paid for. You've been prayed for. Take full advantage of those opportunities. Show up. Show up ready to learn. Show up eager, you know, to take it all in, because those are the things that's going to prepare you for the next level. And the thing is, start where you are, use what you have, and do what you do best. Start where you are, use what you have, and do what you do best. Because everybody has been given a special gift that's earmarked for them. Nobody can do it better. And your thing is to find out what that gift is. The Bible says your gift will make room for you and place you before great men. I'm a witness. My gift continues to make room for me. And I tell you what, I have been in some places, and I have been in some rooms, and I have looked up and said, Lord, only you could have done this.
Well, I tell you what, Darla, thank you for your time today. You're such an inspirational person. Let me tell you what we're doing with these interviews. So I use an app called Call Recorder that records our conversation. Of course, that'll be a part of our oral history that we will just use just the raw video on our website. But we have a larger project, our shared experiences, that we'd like to do using Zoom conversations and grouping like people. And so what I'd like to be able to do is to use this interview to kind of whittle down what we want to do in terms of the 10 recordings that we'll do, the video recordings that we'll do also. There's a lot of media interest in this project, a lot of media interest in this project. And as we're just beginning the first phase of demolition for Alan Benedict Court. We've awarded the contract. Heavy equipment has not appeared on the site yet. We expect that to take about 6 months from the time that the actual demolition begins. And then from that, then we'll have the public input period, which will be about 6 months. We expect that after that, the development will begin, which will take another year. So we're probably about maybe 2 years, maybe 24 months away from the actual development being built. But on the way there, we intend to have a number of special projects and special events. And I would love for you to be a part of those. And so from here, I will go ahead and chronicle this one. And we'll be back in touch with you probably within, you know, the next month to 45 days, depending on where we are, you know, in our, as we move through the project itself, to try to get some times and dates from you so that we can do the video portion of it. And then we'll figure out from there where we're going, where we are going in terms of special events. I want to time it so that it correlates with where we are with the demolition, because we'd like to see if we can get you to come back to South Carolina to perhaps participate in some of those special events, if that's something that you're willing to do. But you're such an outstanding example of what it is we're trying to show, and that is you can get anywhere from here. You can.
Absolutely.
So it's just, you've been so inspirational, and I thank you for your time on the conversation. I usually budget about 30 minutes, but I was so enthralled at 25 minutes until I knew it would take me at least 45, and it has done that. And I thank you for all of your time.
It is my honor. As I sit here, I can't help but feel the spirit of my mom, Dorothy May Hampton Davenport, and my dad, William Earl Davenport, you know, as they told the stories and how they continued to tell the stories, you know, and starting from humble beginnings. And I just feel that they're rejoicing that their story is being told. And that's my hope in terms of my daughter and my grandchildren, that we will continue to tell our children, teach the children, lest they forget, that we will continue to tell the story. This is our story, you know, and what a story it is. Hats off to you and your team for having the presence of mind, to having the love, for having the expertise to be able to continue the legacy, because that's what it's about. It's about legacy, living one and leaving one.
Thank you so very much. Goodness.
I love you already. Okay, let me just let you know this. Look, I'm from the South, and it raises up. I love you already because I feel your passion. I feel your heart. I feel your dedication. I feel the same thing that you just shared with me. I feel the same thing in you. This is not a job for you. This is a labor of love for you. This is a divine assignment for you. So may God continue to bless everything that your hands are assigned to do. May he continue just to reveal those things within you that have not even yet surfaced yet. And may you continue to exhaust all of the gifts that he's given you. Yes.
Thank you. You bless me more than you know. Thank you so very much. And I look forward to the next time I have the opportunity to talk to you.
My joy.
All right, dear. Thank you.
Bye-bye.